Welcome back to Wings Nuts, the weekly audio program that talks about each and every episode of classic 90s sitcom Wings. Hey, Emerson, you just know that the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Am I right?
It sure is, Jared. Can I tell you like a very funny thing that my adult friends and I used to say?
I'd love to hear.
The best part of shooting up is heroin in your blood. Pretty clever, huh? For a bunch of adults.
Yes, that's really cute. I like it. And today we are gathered together to discuss the season 2 episode, All in the Family, which was the 9th episode of season 2.
19th episode.
19th episode of season 2.
Yes.
19th episode of season 2.
Yes.
I was going to say, this episode was, of course, directed by Noam Pitlick, produced by Roz Doyle. And the writer on this one is Brian Winter. Previously, we talked about A Little Nightmare Music, which he also wrote.
Oh, okay. With the conductor from Minnesota.
Yeah. And that's where they gave us the beautiful line, I'm waiting.
Yes.
So we'll see if he has any lines that are as sticky as that one in this episode.
Sure. Do you want to hear the synopsis of this episode?
Yes, please.
I always pull like a wiki and an IMDb, but as we were talking about before we started recording, I was kind of investigating Paramount Plus, and I was looking for a review of this episode because I want to, like, if people write reviews, I want to read them. Hey, if any listeners, if you guys write reviews, please send them to us. I want to like read them on the air.
Yeah.
So I pulled the Paramount Plus synopsis because it was the most poorly written of the three. While Joe and Helen test the boundaries of their new romance, period, Kenny admires Brian's ability with women until attractive mother becomes his boss's next target, period. Kenny admires Brian's ability with women until attractive mother becomes his boss's next target. Did our boy get like upgraded and like jump over to Paramount Plus? Because I love also while Joe and Helen test the boundaries of their new romance.
Period.
Kenny admires Brian's ability with women until attractive mother becomes his boss's next target.
You would think the paid streaming service would have better copy than the crowdsourced internet site.
But I will say I'm not surprised because my experience with Paramount Plus is that they really did like a shitty job. They were the worst streaming service I've ever subscribed to. And if you guys have any discounts or free months coming up, send them to me. I want to resubscribe.
Yeah, I guess every like media conglomerate was in a race a few years ago to get their streaming services out there. And I can imagine some intern feverishly writing out thousands of synopses for shows.
Yes.
And was that the full synopsis too?
That was it. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that they made Brian sound like a total sexual predator.
Yeah. I mean, if he was dating my mom, I might have the same kind of feel toward him. Also, because we have like, that's kind of the A story is that Brian dates Kenny's mom. B story is Helen and Joe have like jealous moments in their relationship. And then C story is kind of Roy needs glasses.
Roy tries on a pair of glasses. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we had some guest stars show up in this episode. Marie Marshall playing Melinda.
Yes.
Also known as Kenny's mom has got it going on. And she was on As the World Turns. She was Mary on the show Billy. I don't know if you remember the show Billy. It was Irish comedian Billy Connolly. It was like kind of his vehicle. Uh-huh. I think it went for like one season. And she was the lead on that, the the lead she played Billy's better half on that.
Okay.
And she was Kelsey on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Any listeners out there like me might know her just from being in like every commercial in the 80s and 90s.
Really?
I sent you like a YouTube link with like 13 and a half minutes of her commercials, and it's like 27 commercials back to back, including, which is why I thought that you opened the episode with it, a Folgers commercial.
Oh my God.
Yes. She is like one of the most photogenic human beings I've ever seen. She has like just this great smile.
Mm-hmm.
She's really pretty, and she really has like a very immediate, like she can really just like immediately like communicate happiness in a way that like I think made her really attractive to like various advertising agencies. And so, yeah, she advertised everything from like Folgers to Raisin Bran Raisin Nut Bran.
Oh, yeah. Cracklin' Oat Bran. Yeah. Remember that one?
I don't know.
Raisin Nut Bran.
We took the wrinkles out of raisins and the blah out of bran.
How do you get rid of all those wrinkles?
We took raisins plump and juicy and rolled them with nuts.
Very plump.
Very juicy.
Very good.
They said we couldn't do it.
New Raisin Nut Bran. The best tasting raisin bran.
I love, because like it's so common for like, you know, like people to give an inspiring speech and to be like, they said we couldn't do it. This against all, all like the things. And they include that in the song. Oh my God. We took the wrinkles out of raisins and the blah out of bran.
To take the wrinkle out of a raisin, don't you just need to like rehydrate it and make it a grape again?
Yeah. But I love it. They said we couldn't do it.
All those the song. Downers and haters out there.
Yeah.
Well, was that Marie Marshall's personal YouTube page?
It might be. Yeah. It's under her name. So make sure you guys check out at Marie Marshall 8089.
Yeah.
She's got 3 subscribers. Oh, make that 4 subscribers.
There you go. hey, Marie.
But yeah, she's pretty awesome. I kind of wish they gave her they gave her enough. But
she,
I liked her.
She kind of disappears from the episode, and it's just up to Brian to tell Kenny that he broke up with her, but you don't get the breakup scene.
You kind of do, because over the phone, but yeah. Like, yeah, you don't see her.
Yeah, it's just too bad. She can't stop flapping her jaw, running her mouth.
Yeah, it's too bad.
The woman is unable to shut up. She cannot stop talking.
Then we had Gordon McManus as customer. And he notably played Mike in the video, It's Okay to Say No to Drugs.
Okay.
He had like two credits, and was the best one.
I love it.
Then we had Donna Fuller as Woman, and she was in the film Angel, the film Tough Turf, and she appeared in an episode of Cheers.
Okay.
Then we had Sharon Lee Jones as Blonde Woman.
Okay. Wait, so Blonde Woman is the woman that Brian hits on. And then the other woman is just Woman?
Yeah, she was the one who I think came up in the end of the episode.
With the purse.
With the purse, yeah, who Joe rifled through her purse.
Yes. Yikes.
Yeah, all these diverse female characters, Woman and Blonde Woman. But no, Blonde Woman was in Step by Step, Silk Stockings, Night Court, and she appeared in Weird Science, probably sharing the screen with Michael Manasseri, a.k.a. Kenny McKelvey.
We love Kenny.
And last, we had Passenger, played by Christopher Darga. Now, this guy has hundreds of credits, but I clocked Family Matters, Herman's Head, Cheers, Roseanne, Seinfeld, How I Met Your Mother, New Girl, Modern Family, just tons of stuff. And of course, Michael Manasseri returns as Kenny McKelvey. I was wondering if I can share some of his written musings.
Yeah, let's hear it.
He wrote, because he's producing and directing nowadays. So in 2016, he wrote a pretty cool little article in Movie Maker entitled On-Set Chemistry, How the Pickle Recipe's Michael Manasseri Learned the Weird Science of Directing. The Pickle Recipe refers to a film he directed, but this kind of takes little vignettes from his career, and he relates how it informed his directing on his own film. But there's a small section where he talks about his experience at Wings. And this section is titled Flashback, Interior Stage 19, Paramount Studios, 1990, Day. I'm on the set of the NBC sitcom Wings. I'm playing a reoccurring character named Kenny, a young pilot who looks like he's 12. The writers, producers of the show earn their chops on Cheers and Frasier. This is the funniest, most well-written dialogue I've ever had the pleasure of saying. Most of my scenes are with Steven Weber, and we play off each other with ease. Director Noam Pitlick guffaws off camera as Steve and I rehearse our scene. Every now and then he gives us a suggestion, but for the most part, he just lets us play.
That's great.
I thought that was really cool. Shall we cover the news?
News, sure.
This comes to you from the presses of the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. Headline, Maris changes plea, admits to marijuana charge. So this guy, James Maris, and they give his address of South Shore Road, pleaded guilty this week of one charge of selling marijuana to an undercover agent. And I love the details of this because the undercover agent says he met Maris in a bar, went to Maris's house, where Maris weighed out a half ounce of marijuana and sold it to the agent for $100. Now, Maris, when he gets to court, he pleaded guilty, but he says, A, I didn't meet the agent in a bar. B, I never weighed it. And C, I only charged him $80. So I'm like, okay, the guy's pleading guilty. What reason would he have to lie? In his sentencing, the judge ordered him to pay back the county $300 in drug purchase money lent to the police. So I'm like, okay, I think this cop was lying. I think this cop took $300, went and got drunk at a bar, spent most of it, told his superiors that he met this guy in the bar, mm-hmm. and then tried to skim $20 for himself to write into his pocket by saying the guy charged him $100.
Yeah.
And it's pretty fucked up that this honest man, Maris, gets arrested and found guilty for this. And he has to pay back the police department for I mean, are they going to give him his half ounce of weed back?
Nope. Yeah. He's at SOL.
I can imagine how mad Maris was. He doesn't want his customers thinking he overcharges for his half ounces.
Yeah. Yes.
Everyone knows him as the guy on South Shore Road that you can get half an ounce for $80.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even weigh it. You get a little bit extra in there, you know?
Mm-hmm. So I have kind of a follow-up. I think I might have even mentioned this follow-up previously, but we got new school lunches get thumbs up from students. This is the Inquirer Mirror still. 12-year-old Sarah McCauley, her teeth stained raspberry red, flashed a wide smile during lunch period at the Cyrus Pierce School this week. She was halfway through a slush puppy frozen juice drink and was delighted to talk about the virtues of the school's new food service program. This is great. We have edible food now, said the sixth grader. And so this is the one where they do talk about, like, I think I mentioned this previously because they follow up with parents and students, and they talk about students are spending their money on the kind of like the less healthy options now. Mm-hmm. Peter Martin, 12, said he thinks the changes are too expensive, particularly a price increase that raises the cost of chocolate milk from 25 cents to 35 cents.
Ooh.
I had to get normal milk, he complained. You used to be able to get regular milk or chocolate milk for the same price. So for parents wondering how much money to put in their children's pockets every morning, $1.50 will still buy the basic federally subsidized type A lunch. That includes a meat entree, two vegetables, bread, and milk. For an additional 75 cents, they can also buy a dessert or some other specialty items. Last Monday, for example, students could eat a bacon cheeseburger or a chicken salad sandwich, potato chips, lettuce and tomatoes, vegetable soup, an apple, and a milk, all for $1.50. So that's still pretty good.
Yeah, that's great.
But then, like, yeah, one girl said her mother gave her $1 for lunch. I wonder which girl this is. Mm-hmm. Instead of spending that on a sandwich, she bought a large slush puppy for 75 cents and lunched on that alone. Two of her friends sitting around the table gave similar reports, saying their lunches consisted of canned sodas and chips.
Yeah, did your high school or junior high have, like, the fancy school lunches where you can buy all the extra special treats?
My elementary school lunches, like, I loved them. Like, the hamburger there was just, like, this piece of, like, dry meat that I, like, craved that specific flavor every once in a while.
Like a Salisbury steak kind of thing?
I don't know. Yeah, it was like a thin patty, you know, on a bun. And then we did chalupa day.
Ooh.
And the chalupas were great.
In my elementary school, the only kind of meal that stood out to me is they had a day, like, once a month, it seemed, where they would do, like, French toast sticks for lunch, and I loved that.
Ooh, yeah, I don't remember that. I think I liked pizza, I liked the chalupas, I liked the hamburgers, and I can't remember the other days.
I really loved the student page this week, so I grabbed a couple items from the student page. My first one here is entitled The War and My Uncle, written by Jennifer Coutinho, and she's in grade two, okay?
Mm-hmm.
My uncle Pat went to Saudi Arabia. He wrote me a letter and told me what it was like before the fighting started. He is stationed in Al-Kabur near the Persian Gulf. Sometimes he went into camp daily. He played volleyball and threw frisbees. He can throw a frisbee behind his back, between his legs, and with his left hand. When they go into the field, my uncle says he does many things. He builds and digs fighting holes. Sand is really hard to dig. It is the same as the sand they have at the beach. The holes have to be at least 5.5 feet deep, 6 feet long, and 2.5 feet wide. That is what it was like in Saudi Arabia before the fighting started. I hope the war stops and my Uncle Pat can come home safely. We all miss him.
Uncle Pat's digging graves. I love how he tells her, I'm digging fighting holes. No, he is digging graves.
Okay, well, I have a follow-up to the taxi meters. Selectman Nick's Island taxi meters. In a bow to tradition, Selectman rejected a proposal to require island taxi cabs to install rate meters. Members of the board cited installation costs, potential downtime for owners when meters break, and opportunities for abuse under a meter system. And so, yeah, like, it's basically a lot of tourists were complaining that, like, they feel like they're being ripped off by taxi drivers. But taxi drivers have, like, always used this kind of zone system where it's like, if you're going from, like, the airport zone to downtown zone, you're charged kind of like a flat fee. And yeah, like, the different sides, like, I think there's a question of confidence, said Curtis Barnes. Selectman Bernard Grossman said tourists become upset but don't tell the authorities. When they go away mad, he said, they don't come back. Very often, they just go away cursing, said Grossman. And so, yeah, like, they're figuring out, like, a new solution. Like, they, like, as an alternative to meters, the Taxi Owners Association suggested that a zone system with a map replaced the current written zone schedule. The selectman rejected that plan as too complicated and gave the police and the association 2 weeks to come up with a simpler zone map and fare system. Abraham Lincoln said, when you can't solve a problem, appoint a committee, said Grossman. And then the last thing I want to note is that under the new kind of agreements with the selectmen, All drivers will now be required to wear shoes and shirts and dress in a professional manner.
Wait. Shoes yeah. and shirts?
Uh-huh. It just made me laugh that, like, I don't know, like, you might get picked up by some shirtless, like...
shirtless, shoeless yeah. taxi driver.
Where are you going? Oh, sir, to, I'm having a fancy dinner. All right, I'll get you there.
In Italy, we drive the cabs without the shirt and the shoes.
Hey, are you Lebanese?
Also from the student page, this is entitled Little Tape Man, written by Ben Phillips, grade 2. One day I went into a tape store. There were shelves of tapes. I looked at them. I looked at almost all of the shelves except for one. There was a tape I wanted. I went up to the man and gave him the money and I took it home. I rode my bike home and I put in my Walkman. Nothing happened. But then something came out of the tape. It was a little man made out of tape. He was going,
"Mama! Mama! Mama!"
I shut him off. He said,
"Hey, who did that?"
"Me," I said. He had two antennas on his head. They sparked. He shot one at me. I moved and unplugged him. The end.
Was this written by Hamster Boy?
It was written by Ben Phillips, the scariest kid in second grade.
Because there was a kid a few weeks ago that talked about how while his parents were out shopping, his yes. hamster grew and grew yes. and grew.
No, that was another weirdo.
Wow.
These are the kids eating those slushies and pizza and junk food lunches. Getting all wired.
Oh, my God. So I have a question for you.
Shoot.
Is the war over?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, it kind of is.
Yeah, because there's like an article on page 2A after the storm, and mm-hmm. it says the Gulf War is over. The planes that leave the war-torn desert on the hour now carry payloads of soldiers rather than bombs. So yeah. is this kind of like the end of Gulf War part one and then yes, the sequel yeah. is coming? Okay.
Yeah, that's right. I kind of look at it like it was never really over and it still mm-hmm. isn't, but there was an end to active hostilities in Iraq this week.
Which I'm sure we'll hear more about when you jump to the Boston Globe.
Yes.
But I'm going to beat you to it. I have a fun article in the Boston Globe. Lawyer says one of defendant's six personalities made her sell heroin. Cambridge. A law woman charged with distributing heroin should be acquitted because her psyche consists of at least six personalities and one or more of them can assume control, compelling her to do things she would not otherwise do, her lawyer told a Middlesex Superior Court jury yesterday. Norma Roman Valentin, 39 years old from Puerto Rico, but she mm-hmm. was busted in Cambridge. Is that Connecticut?
Or Massachusetts.
Yeah, you might be right. I don't know. For selling heroin. And then I found follow-up articles. So three of women's personas testify at drug trial. Cambridge. A lull woman whose defense in her drug trial in Middlesex Superior Court is that she is beset by multiple personalities took the stand yesterday and spoke in the personas of three of them. Norma Roman Valentin, 39, a native of Puerto Rico, has said she slips unpredictably among six different characters. She testified yesterday that there may be a seventh. Well, then there's an article the following day. Woman accused of dealing heroin claims eighth personality. And basically... the number of personalities that an accused drug dealer says are contained within her psyche increased to 8 yesterday as testimony in Middlesex Superior Court ended with the defendant waxing defiant under cross-examination. In a hostile give and take with prosecutor Shayla Feiss, Norma Raman Valentin insisted she had multiple personalities and replied more than once, "Of course I know. I am not retarded, you know." When the exchange became tense, she put her head down onto the witness stand and then raised it, saying she was now another person. Until Thursday, Roma and her attorney, Stephen Rappaport, maintained that she was beset by six personalities. So here we go. Norma, a shy, depressed, unassertive woman whose birth name is on all documents. Vicky, an aggressive, dangerous drug dealer and barfly. Alice, a gentle, sociable compromiser. Virginia, a coquette and seductress. Mary Lou, childlike and submissive. And Alyssa, a clairvoyant who has been predicting that Vicky will end up in jail for drug dealing. While testifying Thursday, Roman told Rappaport she had learned in therapy that there was a seventh persona called me.
Me?
M-E, me.
Okay.
And then yesterday, her therapist for the past 10 years testified, saying there was also an eighth persona called India. India, said John Dvorsny, a psychiatric social worker, is the person that seems to want to integrate all the others into a sound hole. And okay, it didn't work. She got busted. I couldn't find any follow-up to say how long she got put away, but they found her guilty. And so,
it turns out, Judge, I got a ninth personality. It's an expert witness, and they are going to say all the stuff that lets me beat this rap.
Yeah. Oh, and actually there's a 10th personality, which is like a superior court judge that has like authority over this court, and they say that I'm acquitted.
Yeah. It sucks when like one of your personalities is a heroin dealer and then two of them are addicts. Like, you just can't get ahead.
Yeah, it is pretty sad too, because like she has a kid, like a 19-year-old son, and they like the article talks about like the son's aware for multiple personalities. They say that the son was raised by the demure one. Who was it?
Oh, okay.
Mary Lou, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 But it's like that poor kid, man. You got to be like, like, you know, like your friends are like, "Hey, can we go over and play Nintendo?" I don't know. I'm not sure who's home today.
We don't want that coquettish one to be there.
Yeah. And I mean, like, if, you know, I don't want to make light of her possible like mental illness too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's sad in that regard as well. So
yeah,
I hope the best for her. I tried to find a follow up to see where she is now. And I also realized that like these articles are from like 1991. It's been 30 something years from then. And I'm sure like a lot of felons probably change their names after they get out and like kind of try to establish new lives.
That's a good idea.
That's what I would do.
Me too. Yeah. Come to think of it.
Start a Wings podcast. Mm-hmm. Pretend I never stole that island. I don't know.
Well, all right. I am going to hop to the Boston Globe.
Cool.
And as we learned, the active hostilities in Iraq have ended. I chose kind of to dive into this one article or series of articles, kind of focusing on Bush, and he's doing a big time victory lap. They got a photo of him there just like laughing and smiling. The headline says, "Bush says now is the time to end Arab-Israel conflict. Asserts war victory has transformed the U.S. So he is getting high off of victory and thinking he's going to solve all the problems in the Middle East now, which of course we know he did, because now we're in the future. And of course he did. And I'll quote him here. "If our forces could win the ground war in 100 hours, then surely the Congress can pass this legislation in 100 days. Let that be a promise we make tonight to the American people." And so this is like, I don't know, like a Hall of Fame baseball player threw a no-hitter in a Little League game and then thought he could man a space mission to the moon. Like, he is just thinking he can solve all the world's problems. And I love he kind of like outlines his plan kind of. And James Baker laid it out there for people. I'll quote here: "To all the challenges that confront this region of the world, there is no single solution, no solely American answer, but we can make a difference. America will work tirelessly as a catalyst for positive change. And then the outlined four goals of to facilitate those changes are to set up a peacekeeping force among the Arab nations to provide protection to the less powerful nations in the region, to control the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction and the missiles used to deliver them, to create new opportunities for peace and stability in the Middle East, and particularly to bridge the long-standing differences between Israel and Arab states. And then lastly, to foster economic development in the Gulf region. So I don't know. Let's check the report card and see how we've done since Bush outlined this all out. And yeah, we failed. This was not very prophetic, but that's where we're at now. I'm just happy it seems like we won't have to talk about Iraq that much anymore.
Hey, Dad. It's your son, George Obey. Hey, what do you say? While you're giving that big old speech to Congress, we unroll a big old banner that says "Mission Accomplished." What do you think, Dad? Well, I'm going to attempt a more difficult article, a tongue twisting tasting. This is under what is this section called? Oh yeah, names and faces. The kind of like little, you know, kind of more like tabloidy fun articles, usually short. Tomorrow, the Bostonian Society presents Period Potables, a participatory perusal of popular potions, or what Bostonians drink in days gone by. Damn it, I failed. In the rotunda at Liberty Square, 22 Battery March Street, Boston, the history and customs of drinking from the earliest settlement to the advent of the temperance movement will be discussed in an illustrated lecture by culinary historian James Baker of Plymouth Plantation. Following the lecture, refreshments from the past will be tasted and compared. Admission is $11, but in order to get out, you need to recite the lecture's title without slurring. Honestly, this sounds like exactly where I'd want to be. Sounds so interesting to me. I love stuff like this.
A culinary cultural experience.
Yeah, like taste whatever. What various like cocktails and stuff people mm-hmm. are drinking. Mm-hmm. I decided to like, kind of like loosen up tonight, and I got myself a virgin Bloody Mary, which I don't know if you know this, but like virgins kind of represent purity. So I'm pretty sure this is just like a more pure vodka version of a Bloody Mary.
Let's see you take a sip.
Here you go. It's crazy too, because I can't even taste the alcohol in it, but you know, I know that since it's a virgin Bloody Mary, it's got to be extra pure, strong.
Yeah.
They said it was a mocktail, which I love, because that means that they're just like mocking up these crazy cocktails that are stronger than usual.
I hope you can lucidly talk about this episode tonight.
Hey, real quick question for you.
Mm-hmm.
When will they ask the Riddler?
What?
While the Joker and now in Batman 2, the Penguin make a fortune on the big screen, the Riddler waits his turn. Perhaps he'll be called for in Batman 3. In the meantime, the original Riddler himself, Frank Gorshin, will bring his act as a stand-up comic and impressionist to Nick's Comedy Stop on April 19th and 420.
Which Batman film was it that we got the Riddler? Was it Batman and Robin, the fourth one?
I think it was the third one.
Was it the third one, Batman Forever? Oh,
Batman Forever. Yeah, maybe it was the fourth one then.
And I think the one with the Riddler was the same one as with like Schwarzenegger, Mr. Freeze, and Uma Thurman.
Yeah, because the first one is the Joker. The second one is the Penguin, and you get Catwoman in there as well.
Yeah.
Who's in the third one?
You know what? I think it is the third one. The third one, I think, was Batman Forever, and it was the Riddler. Mr. Freeze, okay. Poison Ivy. Then the fourth one was Batman and Robin, I think.
Holy rusted metal, Batman.
Mm-hmm. That's literally the only thing I remember from that movie.
Ba-da-ba, ba-da-ba, ba-ba, da 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 da. So, you have anything else from the Boston Globe?
Yeah, because now that we can stop talking about Iraq, it's going to be all positive news from here on in.
Uh-oh.
So I have the headline, Man's Film of Police Beating Spotlights LA Racial Tension.
Ooh.
And this is, of course, the war at home.
Yes.
It's the Rodney King beating. This happened, and I think just about everyone would be familiar with this story, but it's... I was surprised rereading this that he was only 25 at the time. I remember seeing him in the celebrity boxing shows and stuff like that. And on, you know, he was on a couple reality shows. And I think of him as a elder man now, but he was young at the time. But Rodney King was, you know, beaten by police, and it was caught on video. And this horrible, horrible event. And, you know, his trial led to the LA riots, or I should say the officers kind of being let off scot-free, right?
Yeah.
And,
which led to the riots.
Yeah. And which totally sucks. But I mean, the silver lining of it is we kind of really sorted out the problem of police violence and police brutality and racism in our policing, and kids today don't have to grow up in this environment, right? 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 Like, what?
The wild thing, too, is that article, for sure, like, more than anything else we've gone through so far, mm-hmm. on this podcast, that one took me back to, like, 1991.
Yes.
So I remember just, like, that sinking feeling, watching that news clip on the news,
yeah.
watching the video on the news, and just being like, this is insane. You know, and like the next year or two are just like, it's the long trial. And then, yeah, like,
yeah,
those riots were terrifying.
And
I lived in Van Nuys, not even close to like where the riots were, but I had mm-hmm. no idea that, like, you know, the whole city was on fire. It was crazy.
The strange thing about seeing this article now is we know like what a big story this is, but it's kind of buried towards like the back of the news section. Like, you could tell it was fairly big news at the time, but they had no idea like how this story would kind of continue and what it would evolve into.
Yeah.
And that it would like resonate years later. Cause it's not front page news. When this story appears, even though it's like the first time it appears, and like also the tone of it, like the tone isn't, we'll say, like sensitive to racial injustice and that sort of thing. Like, one sentence stood out in particular. The police are still like kind of not, it's not like they're going to apologize for what they did. And mm-hmm. the article says, nobody knows what he will be charged with yet. Like,
yeah.
Like, he didn't, I think all charges ended up being dropped against him, and the police themselves went on trial and were acquitted. And, is super shitty, and it sucks. And I was joking, but it sucks that like this is still an issue we wrestle with still today, is like mm-hmm. over policing, racial bias in police, like police violence.
Well, if you want to get your mind off of that this week, one star, King Ralph.
What?
Lovable oaf John Goodman is wasted in this high concept comedy playing a vulgar American who becomes king of jolly bloomin' England. The laughs are few, and Peter O'Toole is wasted as Goodman's oh so noble secretary. So I read that because I figured like they would probably hate on it, and I figured they would also probably hate on Nothing But Trouble. But I had to dig back to like February 16th to find an article about it. So you ready for Nothing But Trouble?
Oh, yes.
Nothing But Trouble is tacky, tedious. A not so funny thing happened on the way to Atlantic City, and Dan Aykroyd decided to make an offensively tedious movie about it called Nothing But Trouble. His Wacky Comedy Chronicles, The Wacky Adventures of a Quartet of Wacky. Oh, wow. I guess they're just doing that on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Called Nothing But Trouble, His Wacky Comedy Chronicles, The Wacky Adventures of a Quartet of Wacky New Yorkers Who Get Trapped in the Wacky Town of Vulcanvania. After ignoring a stop sign, Chevy Chase, Demi Moore, and two dippy Rio tycoons are detained by Vulcanvania's ancient judge, played by Aykroyd in heavy makeup, who likes to sentence traffic violators to death in his bone stripper machine. Before landing on the conveyor belt, of course, the four victims undergo the slapstick frights and frolics of the wacky townspeople, who include John Goodman in a dual role as a cop and as Aykroyd's mute daughter. It's all like a junk food headache. Visually, Vulcanvania is ambitious, a post-nuclear amusement park with hints of Mayberry RFD. Aykroyd is trying to make his ghost town into a stylized garbage heap, and he is only partially successful. In terms of grotesque stereotypes, however, Aykroyd is entirely successful, making his Brazilian millionaires into an ignorant, tacky brother and sister team who squawk endlessly about a Vulcanvania. When the sister says, "Oh, look, a balage," as the foursome swings into town. Oh, look, a village, as the foursome
a village
swings into town and chases Beamer, you know you're headed for nothing but trouble.
Excuse me, he's trying to make this movie sound bad? I'm sorry, Mr. Reviewer. Sorry that Dan Aykroyd tried to like be creative, make art, and like share this beautiful vision with us.
This was like a basic cable nightmare for me. Like there's like a handful of movies like this where it was almost like one day I remember that I had seen this movie and I was like, was that a real fucking movie? Like with Digital Underground, like doing yes. a rap song.
Yeah.
And that one, the Garbage Pail Kids movie was on there.
Yeah.
The Peanut Butter Solution. Did you remember that one?
I've never seen that. That sounds great.
It is a Canadian movie about like a kid who goes into a haunted house. He gets scared by a ghost. All of his hair falls out. And then one of the ghosts tells him how to like grow his hair back using like a special peanut butter solution, including like dead flies. I forget what else goes into it, but he puts too much on and then his hair won't stop growing.
Great.
And then he gets taken hostage by a man making paintbrushes. They use his beautiful, like long, luscious locks to make paintbrushes. This is a real movie.
Stop it. Stop it. I'm sold.
Yeah.
I need to see it.
It's so weird.
I love it.
So you have anything else from the Boston Globe?
No, that's it for the news for me today. So let me know if you have another story.
I don't, but I grabbed some of the top tens. So I pulled that from like the weekend kind of following. So these are like the domestic totals from like mm-hmm. the March 8th to the 10th. Number one is Silence of the Lambs. Fuck yeah. Number two, New Jack City.
Oh, number, I love that.
Number three, The Hard Way. That's like James Woods, right? And Michael J. Fox, is he in that?
I don't know. Haven't seen it.
Number four, Sleeping with the Enemy is still up there. And number five is The Doors.
Cool. You want the number one song for the week?
Sure. Let's hear it.
Someday by Mariah Carey.
I don't remember how that one goes.
Me neither.
I guess the music I listen to still from the early 90s is Sonic Youth, Pavement. That stuff didn't really like,
yes,
I think, make a dent. And so
they weren't chart toppers in the day.
And then the other thing I grabbed this week, Jared, the New York Times bestseller list. Number one on the bestseller list is Heartbeat by Danielle Steele.
Okay.
I had to go down to number 12 before I found a book that I've actually read, Jurassic Park by Michael Crichton.
Oh, yeah. That was a big one for me.
Mm-hmm. But number two is Cold Fire by Dean Koontz. Number three is Forgiving by Laverl Spencer. Number four is Magic Hour by Susan Isaacs. Number five is A Secret Pilgrim by John le Carré. Yeah, like these are, you know, I don't know. Books are kind of like funny, fickle things too. like something can be like a flash in the pan New York Times bestseller and then just never get talked about again for the rest of eternity.
You know, often like with bestsellers, they're like kind of the airport books and not really stuff made for longevity.
Well, should we get into the episode?
I'm ready to take off into this episode of Wings.
So the cold open, Brian and Kenny are hogging the Sandpiper computer playing some game, preventing Faye from registering a passenger. When they run off to play a prank, when Faye shoos them off, basically, they run off to play a prank on Aeromass, which is to cut holes in their, what do they call it? The air sick bags?
The sick bags, yes. So,
yeah.
So people puke, it just comes out of the hole, I guess.
Yeah. The customer asks, who are those bozos? And Faye tells him, those are the pilots. And the customer, does a little, wide eye, oh, and then goes to Aeromass.
I love how he just, quietly exits walking towards Aeromass while Faye starts click-clacking away.
Faye's like, name? He's just not there.
And this cold open kind of thematically connects with the episode because it's a very, Brian and Kenny episode. They are definitely a twosome. And I do love how Kenny brings out the most childish in Brian.
Yes. But I wrote we got some grade A unprofessionalism here, boys. But also with the amount that Joe's apparently paying them, I don't think he can really ask them to do better.
Joe might be the worst paying airline in terms of what he pays his pilots, but I imagine he has to be paying way more than Kenny is making at the Ahoy Matey restaurant.
Yeah.
I don't get the sense that Kenny came from poverty or anything because, you know, his Nantucket seems like a kind of a well-to-do community. And pilot's lessons are not cheap. So I'm sure he has a big debt he somehow has to pay off. So maybe that's why he's hustling so many jobs.
Oh, that's a good point. We do because you sent me that those things you read earlier from Kenny describing his or the actor that plays Kenny describing his time on the thing. I looked up how old he was when they were making Wings.
Mm-hmm.
He was 16. He turned 17 at the end of February. This episode aired March 7th. And so I'm pretty sure that he's still 16 years old when this episode was shot. But they establish that he's 18.
Okay. That's unusual for a teenage actor to be playing older. You often see 20-year-olds playing 18-year-olds,
You know why I love it though? Is because it adds to the comedy.
Yes.
they're able to say that he's 18, but he looks 12. Yes. He says, I think in the article that he looked 12.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the Kenny character.
Me too. And I totally agree. I think that this I think I've said in the past that I like the cold open to be kind of a standalone unrelated. But I also agree that I think this sets a really nice tone.
Yeah, I liked, for me, this cold open was hot.
Do you want to give it a rating?
4 stripes.
I think I'm going to, I'm going to go 3.5. And that's me giving it a pretty high.
Yeah, you're being generous. You're kind of hard on the cold opens. You have high standards when it comes to cold opens.
Well, because a really, really good cold open can be so fucking great. And this one is really good in terms, especially in terms of the Wings universe. Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm going to go with 3.75.
Okay.
This one, within what we've seen in Wings so far, this is probably top tier.
Yeah. Let's have a 12 Angry Men scenario and argue about it for the next 2 hours until you're up to a 3.9.
All right. Sounds good. Oh, but what are you going to do? I can't even think of that's my attempt to find a line from that movie.
Oh, here's the bailiff again telling us to do it.
Oh, point that fan at me. It's really hot in this room.
I'm an angry man.
There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 of us in here. All right. So first scene, Joe and Helen are being a bit jealous, secretive. Like, basically, Helen asks Joe for the phone number or address of, like, the flower shop. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, it's in my address book. And then realizes as soon as he says that, like, there's things in the address book he doesn't want her to see. He runs in, he snatches it, he tells her the phone number or address, whatever. And, it kind of sets off this sort of, like, weird, jealous, secretive tone for the whole episode between the two of them.
Yeah, Helen and Joe are fighting again.
They're fighting again, yeah.
Every single episode now, they are fighting.
Which is, like, it's so funny, too, because I remember, like, being young and, like kind of when I first started dating, being like, you know, like, what if she's lying to me or whatever? Like, kind of being easily jealous. But they both seem like they're old enough to be kind of over that.
Yes.
I don't know. They've known each other for a long time, and, like, they seem like they're in love when we get a good episode of them kind of showing affection to each other. And so, yeah, like, it feels like they should be kind of past this.
I liked them better as a couple before they became a couple.
Yeah.
What did Helen mean when she said, called Joe a hubcap versus madcap?
Oh, he said he's a madcap. You know, I'm being wild and silly. Then she said, you're a hubcap. I think just 'cause it's a different kind of cap.
Never heard like anyone called a hubcap before.
Have you ever heard anybody called a lox before?
No, never heard of anyone being called a lox.
And so, yeah, they have like a little kind of like back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
She teases him. She says, like, there's nothing in my purse. And then she starts going through and be like, oh, and then she runs out.
Yes.
And it seems like she has something to hide, or maybe she is, as she says later, teasing him.
I had a couple lines I liked in this episode, in this scene, mostly from Helen. First one was being like when she delineates the two kinds of private, you know, the first kind is like, this is private because no one cares. It's so innocuous. And the second kind of private is those secrets you don't want to share with anyone, the kinds that make your forehead break out in a cold sweat. And then as she says that, like, she mops off the sweat from Joe's brow.
Yeah. Oh, we forgot to mention in the cold open that that on Kenny's turn on the computer, he got 85,000 points and 3 swords in the dragon's eye.
Yes. Generic video game lingo, kind of.
Yes, yes. Like written by like a bunch of Hollywood. Oh, I don't know. My son was playing something the other day.
It reminded me of a game at that time. I think it was called like Dragon Quest or something. It was the kind that like tried to play like a cartoon show almost. And you'd have to like hit right at like the exact right time and hit up at the exact right time to like trigger the correct response. Yeah, that game was the worst.
I went to like an arcade last year, I think. And it's one of those like pay by the hour.
Mm-hmm.
And my buddy and I spent like a pretty good amount of time on Dragon's Quest is trying to like make something happen because that game is so weird.
Yeah, it sucks.
Like,
yeah,
press up at the right time and then like your character does a somersault forward. It's a cool idea because they're able to like kind of use kind of preset animations that were sort of like they looked really great for the time, but yeah, like, the gameplay is really, really bad.
Yeah. Did you catch the other line from Helen in this first scene when she's describing hypothetically what could be in her purse?
Whips and chains and selection of sexual devices from the Far East.
And then they both have a shared look of like disappointment that she in fact does not have those things in her purse.
So then she leaves and then we follow her out to the airport lobby where Roy is disappointed because he's reading in the article that Miss Nantucket pickled at state beauty pageant. And I wrote down, first of all, that like, I don't think anybody else in 1991 was referring to drunkenness as being pickled.
Yeah, we have some Catskills ass lingo in this episode.
Yeah.
Pickled, lox, hubcap.
Anyway, is it Lowell? Yeah, Lowell's with him. So like Lowell reads an article and he goes like, you ever thought you might need glasses? And Roy's just like, oh, I don't need glasses.
Mm-hmm.
No, not ready to be there, but
And one of my favorite moments is between Lowell and Roy here, where Lowell is like conflating, quotes Dylan Thomas, but sprinkles in a little Bob Dylan.
As Dylan once said, do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage, for the times they are a-changing.
I think you're mixing up Bob Dylan with Dylan Thomas.
No, that's ridiculous. Dylan Thomas was the poet laureate of Wales. Bob Dylan starred in Gilligan's Island.
No, 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 that's Bob Denver.
Bob Denver is the one who sings Rocky Mountain High.
Oh, right, right.
Yes.
It's good.
Yeah. I enjoyed that a lot, too. And then we cut over to Brian and Kenny sitting at the counter. Hot blonde walks in and we get a hold my gum moment.
Yes.
Basically, Brian impresses Kenny with, his like skills to like score a date with this blonde woman. We learn, what does he say? Well, if you're in the mood for something deep fried, I'm working in the drive through window at Ahab's Fast Fish. And yes. I was like, yes, yes. I loved it. I was so happy to find out that like, a drive-through fast food restaurant called Ahab's Fast Fish existed on Nantucket Island.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked Brian's line about like dinner's on me, but not Italian. The meatballs roll right off.
Yes. I just can't get over Kenny having like another side hustle.
Yeah.
So it's like, man.
I love that last line too. Like Kenny, like Brian's like, you have another job? And Kenny goes, no offense, but your brother doesn't pay very well. Mm-hmm. And then Faye goes, are they still hiring?
Yes.
Oh, poor Faye.
I don't know about you, but I worked all through high school too.
I think I was like working from like 13 or 14. Like my dad owned a house painting company. And so I would spend the summers like, you know, sanding, painting trims, kind of like doing... Yeah, basically just painting.
Oh, wow. I never knew that about you. My dad had an apartment painting business.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my dad would do like house painting. He would put basically any jobs that would hire him. So it would be offices sometimes or restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, like I was proud to point out, there's this, I think it was like a Jerry's Famous Deli on Van Nuys Boulevard, like north of the 101. And for a while, that wall was painted by me. And I was like, hey, I painted that.
That's so cool.
That place has long since become something else.
I do want to kind of put a pin in the fact that in this scene, Kenny is very jealous of Brian's prowess with women. And he's got no complaints about how he even says something kind of like sexist. Because when the blonde woman walks in, Kenny goes like, wow, he says something to the effect of, wow, look at that coming through the door.
Yes.
So all of the, you know, qualms he has with Brian later, he does not have at this time. Just for the record, he thinks it's very cool that Brian is a womanizer and has a way with women.
Yeah, he says, look what just came in from gate one. I couldn't even imagine talking to a woman like that. Mm-hmm. And then Brian does the, watch this.
Yes.
Jesus Christ. He hits her with like a dozen pickup lines in a row and kind of like flirts with her. And she's, yeah.
Yeah.
Like they make a date. And then I think also he says to Faye, oh, Brian's incredible, isn't he? I just hope that someday I'm as successful with women as he is. And then Faye says, oh, well, sure. Shoot at anything that moves. You're bound to hit something.
Yes.
Good on you, Faye.
They are kind of injecting into this like many of like the tools of the trade of pickup artists. You know, the Brian kind of nags her when he says the line about like, oh, you're gonna have that mole looked at, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then Faye with the law of averages, like, you know, I don't know, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And then when she like turns to the camera, she's wearing like a Dr. Seuss hat. And she's got a mystery name tag. I was like, okay. So now we pick up in the next scene, and it's Joe brings the address book out to Helen. And like, he's expecting her to like show him her purse now,
mm-hmm.
but like as a reciprocation, but nope.
Yeah.
So they're continuing their little spat, and like Joe's like, I didn't want you to see this woman's name that you know from high school. And there's a little star next to her name too.
Nancy Ferguson?
Yes.
That cunt.
That cunt.
That's what Helen says, right? She's like,
that cunt.
Yeah, that's why this episode has a PG-13 rating.
Yeah.
Could have been worse. It could have been Sherry Scudder.
Oh yeah.
And I thought Tim Daly does a great acting. That was kind of quickly puts it back in his pocket.
I never knew Joe had so many dates before he picked up an affair with Helen.
I mean, he owns an airline and he's like a handsome man, mm-hmm. even though he doesn't pay people well, so
yeah.
I'm sure he probably, you know, was raking them in.
Can I pump the brakes for a second?
Yeah.
You know what we completely forgot?
Oh my god.
Brian's Tire Report.
Holy shit. Yes, because also that first scene.
It was in the cold open.
It's a new tie, right?
Yeah, it's a new tie in the cold open.
Yeah. It's like a music symbol, a music cleft kind of thing.
That's what I wrote down. I wrote down it's like part cleft note, part spermazoa over a maroon palette. And it reminded me, have you ever seen that French cartoon, Fantastic Planet?
Yeah.
It reminded me of like some of the plants and stuff you'd see in the background details of that. Just the stylistically, it reminded me of Fantastic Planet.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. How funny. Yeah. I also said that it kind of reminds me of like a Microsoft screensaver, like that kind of weird 3D where it's like not fully 3D, but it's kind of an early version of it.
Yeah.
Horsefish meets a music cleft meets a Microsoft 3D screensaver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, we've had some lackluster tie episodes, so I was just happy to see a new tie right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then later in the episode, the horse tie returns. I'm always pleased to see the horse tie.
Great tie, 100%. So we go from that scene with Joe and Helen where she's, you know, still not going to show him her purse, but, you know, now she knows that, was it Rebecca Ferguson?
Nancy Ferguson.
Nancy Ferguson. The camera pans over to Brian and Roy drinking coffee at a table together.
Yeah, just casually shooting the shit. Yeah.
Dogs and cats eating together. Mass hysteria. And so we get a scene where Roy, Brian, and Lowell lament this single scene. They're saying like, you know, look at them fighting. But then Roy's like, yeah, but it's at least better to be in a relationship than to be single.
Mm-hmm.
You know, out there trolling the single bars. It's terrifying, horrible, something out there. And then we find out from Lowell, I know what you mean, Roy. Before I met Bunny, I can't tell you how many evenings I spent sitting at the Knighton Castle wondering where all the great women were. Lowell, the Knighton Castle is a gay hangout.
Mm-hmm.
It is? Well, that explains those phone messages from Steve. So we learn about Lowell in this episode that he's to hang out at a gay bar.
Yeah, and not realize it.
And we also learn from Brian, so like, you know, Brian's lamenting it too. You guys are right, it's tough out there. And then Roy's like, oh, heck, what are you talking about? You don't seem to have any trouble finding women. And he goes, well, no, women, no, but the woman, I mean, it's different. I mean, I'm a reasonably intelligent guy, news to us. I had a scholarship to Princeton. That's news to me.
He mentioned that in NASA. The tennis bum episode.
He said that he went to Princeton, but I don't know if he had a scholarship.
Oh, maybe true, yeah.
Yeah, maybe they mentioned that too. Spent some time at NASA? That's wild.
I think that's in the pilot. I think Joe kind of throws out that he like dropped out of NASA or something.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's crazy.
And then what was the third one? I love the third one.
There's even a small village in Belize where I'm considered a god. And then so he's saying this, he's like, I just don't know where to find like a sensitive, attractive, intelligent woman, you know. And then we hear the best part of waking up. Melinda says, here. And it's it's Melinda, mm-hmm. like some woman we never met before, sitting on the table, and she introduces herself to Brian, and they kind of have a little exchange, flirt back and forth, and make a date.
Yeah. And I really liked how Brian, when she says, like, I'm right over here, a sensitive, intelligent, attractive woman. And Brian's like, oh, with quite a high opinion of herself, I might add.
Yes. And then he says, I can't believe we have so much in common.
Yeah.
Which I wasn't sure if he meant that he has a high opinion of herself, of her as well, or if they both have high opinions of themselves.
That's how I took it. I thought he was trying to flirt with her.
Yeah, that's what I took it to.
Yeah. Go out with me and I'll have you snorting expensive wine out of your nose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so they make a date.
Uh-huh.
And then she says, well, like, I'm like waiting for somebody here. And then they announce the arrival of Sandpiper Air Flight 8 from Hyannis. That's my flight. You're not leaving, are you? Oh, no, I'm meeting somebody. And in walks Kenny. Hi, Mom. Hi, Kenny. And then we get Brian. Mom, Kenny, Kenny's mom. Like, very funny. I love the way he plays that.
And I loved his yeesh.
Yes, that's right. Yeesh.
Yeesh.
We get a few really fun kind of cartoonish moments from Brian in this episode.
Not least of which is him doing Popeye later on.
Yeah, that's one of the ones I definitely was including. So the third scene, this is a pretty quick scene, but Kenny acts excited that Brian and his mom are going out in front of his mom. But as soon as the mom goes to start the car or something, Kenny turns to Brian, stay away from my mom.
Yes.
And I kind of agree, because I don't think coworkers should be dating each other's family. I feel like that's kind of like treading, and I wrote, especially a cat like Brian, but like, I feel like you're treading on kind of uncomfortable territory there.
I can only imagine for a teenager or a young person what it would feel like if your parent is dating anyone, let alone, you know, someone you know too.
Yeah.
And Michael Manasseri's great. Like, Kenny's always only been pleasant and affable and precocious, but he turns on the anger, and I bought it, you know?
I mean, this episode, we'll talk about it at the end, but like, it's a toss-up for MVP between him and Brian for me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think they're both really great.
Yeah. And like, Kenny, you're being a hypocrite. You loved that Brian's way with women until it comes to your mom.
Yeah.
There's too many men out there like that, that are all happy to objectify women as long as it's not their mothers or daughters.
So I don't know. I might be like treading on like bad territory on this, but like, the blonde that comes off the plane earlier feels like she's just looking to have some fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how Brian approaches it too. Like, they're very clearly like using cheesy pickup lines and kind of flirting, but he's not like offering any expectations with it, you know, like, can I take you out? But with Kenny's mom, he meets her under this pretense that he's looking for like a sensitive woman, you know, which feels grosser in the fact that like Brian doesn't seem like he's able to kind of commit to that idea at this time.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, I think that if he's dating a woman under the expectations that they're just going to kind of fool around, try on lingerie, you know, and like, then she'll fly back to wherever she's from tomorrow. I think that's like a more like they have like an agreed upon expectation of what's going to happen, as opposed to like, you know, the like him meeting Kenny's mom under like this, like, she's a sensitive woman. He's looking for the woman.
Yes.
You know? And so I kind of understand it from that regard.
And it is true. I do take Brian at his word as well, that he's like, honestly does want to find, you know, a serious relationship and partner. I mean, it was just a week prior that he was about to be married.
Yeah, true. I think that I think we like a pretty interesting character arc from Brian on this one too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he basically, Brian decided, you know, won't back down. And is this also the same scene where, okay. Yeah. Because Kenny like reminds Brian too, that he's got a date with that other woman.
Uh-huh.
And Brian like can't even remember her, which is like, yeah, that is pretty fucking awful.
So he's going to drop that date and go out with, Kenny's mom.
A minor glitch. I'll brush her off like crumbs on a placemat. And then Kenny's like, oh, bro, that's just not what I'm talking about. Tomorrow, tonight you'll dump her, and tomorrow night it'll be my mom.
Yeah.
And I do believe that Brian kind of does want to find like a more steady thing. Like, well, like he was, I mean, he was sitting at a table with Roy. They were having coffee together. Hey, Roy, you want to sit down for a second and have coffee with me? I don't know. I just love that setup.
Yeah, only in a low moment would Brian put himself in that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the biggest fan of Roy.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they are, but like they just like to rip each other.
And we learn Kenny's middle name was Margaret.
Yes.
To which Brian responds, not the worst looking Margaret I ever met.
Yeah. And he said that she was an Indian fighter, so you watch it, which I don't know if that means that she was a Native American woman that fought, or if she was like a white woman that fought Indians.
Yeah, she was like an Annie Oakley or something. That was a yeesh for me too, yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeesh.
All right. So next scene. Roy calls Faye over to show off his new glasses frames, which are great.
Yeah, they're so good. He looked like a mix between that fashion designer lady, Iris Appel, and the old man from Up.
Yes. Is she the one that they based the woman from Incredibles?
Yes. Yeah. So he looked like two cartoon old people.
Yeah.
I did like those glasses, but they totally brush up against Roy's usual style, which is like Lounge King.
His eyeglasses should look more like a 1970s mafia guy. Like, it should be like thin gold wire framed with like half of it is like a little bit shaded.
Yes. Yeah.
It should be way more like, or like a 1970s porn star glasses. Just like way more sleazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Roy goes like, Afe, can you get over here for a minute? Oh, sure, Roy. I want your opinion about something. I just found out I needing glasses. He's like, I love it too. This is like prime Roy. Just like, you know, very like a little bit of insecurity. I just found out that I'm going to be needing glasses, and I borrowed a pair of these frames to see if I like them. What do you think? And then, yeah, Lowell comes in. Wow, that's a great looking pair of glasses. And then he's like, boy, those lenses are so clear. You'd swear there weren't anything in them at all. Pokes Roy in the eyes. That was very funny. And then I love Lowell. Oh, gag glasses. Oh, you got me, Roy. Man, that was so great.
And yeah, this is the C story, Roy's glasses. Mm-hmm. But he never wears, I'm sure he never wears glasses in the rest of the series. So,
no way.
Does he end up with contacts or does he just decide he's just going to see the world as blurry?
I don't know. But there is a Marie Marshall. Is that her name? The actress that plays Kenny's mom.
Oh yeah, Marie something. Yeah.
There, one of the commercials in that YouTube clip that I sent you is a contact lenses commercial. It's pretty funny.
These days, a lot of people are wearing glasses who really don't have to. People who haven't heard how much contact lenses have changed. Today, Durasoft makes 30-day lenses. Lenses that correct astigmatism. Lenses almost everyone can wear. So if you're still wearing glasses, ask the person who takes care of your eyes about soft, comfortable Durasoft brand contacts and take those glasses off for good.
Hello.
Durasoft.
Kenny does a 180 now.
Yeah, so Kenny is like sitting there reading the newspaper comics and he's like, what's new, kid? And then Kenny goes, Beetle Bailey just got in trouble with the Sarge. Gee, how do they keep that stuff fresh? And then yeah, Kenny like apologizes to Brian for kind of freaking out the day before. He goes, I owe you an apology. I had no right to speak to you the way I did. And don't worry. Like Brian's like, don't worry about it. Your mom's a terrific lady. You just don't want to see her get hurt. And like, oh man, like their back and forth is so great.
Yeah.
Kenny is like, between you and me, I think she's a little crush on you. Oh, really? Yeah. You know, I just had this funny thought. What? What if, you and my mom keep on having such a great time together? Then maybe you'd be my dad. Hey, that'd be something, huh? And then...
Hey, that'd be something, huh? Okay,
it's so funny.
He's so great in that. The uncomfortable, like, laughter is so good.
Oh my God, he just can't even say words anymore. He's just like, yeah.
And like, so we know before we know that the date didn't go well for him. He's not happy. And I don't think we pointed out that this whole scene is like the next day and the date has happened. Yes, I don't know if we did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's very nervous that it could have gone differently. He could have been like, Kenny, I took what you said to heart. And although I had a wonderful date with your mom, I decided we're not going to date any longer. But now it's all turned on its head. And Kenny.
Right. Because Kenny knows that she's got a crush on him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, he goes into Joe's office and goes, please kill me. Kill me, Joe. I'm kind of busy, Brian. Maybe later. I went on a date with Kenny's mom and I promised Kenny I wouldn't hurt her, And now the woman has a massive crush on me. And then Joe goes, what's the problem? And then Brian says a completely normal thing. She's a lox, Joe.
She's a lox.
So I did some searching for this to try to figure out what that means. And all I could find is maybe because lox is a salmon,
mm-hmm.
and salmon's a kind of fish. And so there was an Urban Dictionary definition that suggested that she's a lox means that someone's like a fish.
Okay.
Opening and closing her mouth without paying any attention to what they're saying, maybe? Yeah.
Like one of them singing fish on the walls?
Oh my God, yeah.
But he kind of continues on to say she talks way too much, she just kept talking or something.
Yes. Yeah, she's a human tape loop, but she's not talking about herself. She's talking about her cat or her gardener or how wonderful her ex-husband Dennis is, and she can't understand how Dennis ran out on her, all that stuff.
And it's you were on a first date. That's what you do. You talk to each other. And it's Brian talks a lot too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure this is they get to later in this episode. I'm sure the problem does rest a lot more with Brian than it does with her.
And I mean, we'll get to that as well, but I actually kind of like the way they handled it.
Yeah.
But basically Joe tells Brian that he's got to call her and call it off and be the big man and do the big thing. This is not a situation where he can just ghost her because Kenny is their underage, underpaid pilot.
One good thing about this scene though is with all the kind of outdated references, I did like to hear some kind of modern wordplay, like if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a wonderful Christmas.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that these two have really great chemistry. I love seeing Brian and Joe. Brian's you're really enjoying this, aren't you?
Yeah, they are a really good foil for each other in the best way that only brothers can be.
Yeah, they definitely play off each other pretty fine in a fun way. And so, calls her. Yeah.
I forgot to mention, they did, last week we found the continuity error. Mm-hmm. They had a continuity fuck up here too, because when Brian comes in, Joe says, hey, earlier today you thought you found a winner.
She's a lox, Joe.
Oh, wait a minute. What went wrong? Earlier today you said you thought she had a winner.
Well, I'll tell you what went wrong. She changed on me.
But it wasn't that day. It was the day prior.
Yeah, you're right.
So they need a continuity editor on this show.
Yes, they do.
It was like the UFO episode where it was like...
Yeah.
What was it? The episode where it was like the... No,
no, the UFO episode... UFO episode 2 where Lowell Suppage said it's been over a week, but then
the believers are acting like it's the next day. And then last week where they agree to get married on Friday.
Yeah.
That they're going to get married the next day, but then it's as if it's a week later or something like that.
Yeah. Maybe the Wings universe just doesn't believe in days.
Time moves a little differently on Nantucket.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I didn't realize that. I didn't catch that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and we do this great, like, Brian tries to, like, hand the phone to Joe and, like, make him say that he's from the CDC and ask you're from the Center for Disease Control. Ask her if she's had any contact at all with Brian Hackett. And then I also love that, like, we do kind of see, like, when Brian calls her, he's like, hello. Like, he, like, can't get a word in edgewise.
Yeah.
Which, like, yeah. I mean, that's, to me, that's a solvable problem. Like, I, if I'm dating someone, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but, like, I think that's something he can, like, be like, hey, like, I don't know.
You talk too much, lady.
You can't really say that, can you? But, like, I don't know.
But it's, you know what? It's fine that Brian tried romance and, you know, it was a bad first date. It doesn't work for him.
True.
Kenny's hypocrisy is the thing that stood out the most to me. Not that it is illogical. I think it's logical, but it's just noteworthy to me.
I think, yeah, I kind of understand it to an extent, but I see what you're saying. Like Kenny shouldn't be egging Brian on to begin with, because every one of those women that Brian's hitting on is someone's mom.
Exactly. And
they're all mothers.
Yeah.
We learn. Not really, but they're all someone's mom or daughter or sister.
And it's not like it would have been different if Brian made the date after he knew it was Kenny's mom, but he made the date beforehand. So I cut Brian a lot of slack on that.
Yeah, 100%. If I was Brian, though, in that regard, I would have cut it off before. I would have been like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you're Kenny's mom. I don't know if I feel comfortable going on a date with.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's an easy out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Kenny's my lackey. He's the kid I get into my schemes of selling painted crabs, you know, and exploit for his labor. I just can't date his mom.
Yeah. So then we follow Joe out to the lobby where he discovers Helen's purse sitting on her counter. And we get the laugh.
Her diary.
And so he opens it up and he starts reading her diary. Mm-hmm. And he's like, huh? Like, oh my God. What am I doing? What are you doing? Who the hell is Bob? And why did your loins burn for him last night? And then character actress, I forget her actress's name.
She played a woman.
Woman, yeah. Comes in and she's like, why are you? I left my purse. And he's like, no, this is Helen's purse. Helen's like, nah, my purse is over here in Texas. Yeah, Joe's being a real creep. He should not, even if it is Helen's purse, he should not be reading her diary.
Yeah.
Like, that is, like, a big violation of privacy.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, we get, like, another Joe creep. Joe sleeping in his truck outside of Helen's house when her and Brian are hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, what other examples of creep do we have of Joe?
Jealous Joe.
Jealous Joe, yeah. Want a good look, Joe?
Nope.
No.
Then we get Brian apologizing to Kenny and letting him know that he broke it off with his mom.
Yeah.
And what does Kenny say? Kenny is harsh. He says, like, I hope you die.
We decided. We decided? No, no, no. You mean you decided? I knew you'd do this.
Kenny, you don't understand.
No, no, no. I understand. I understand just fine. You broke my mother's heart, and I hope you die.
Well, I think that went pretty well.
And then we get my favorite scene so far in all of Wings.
Wow.
My notes. Okay. Fifth scene. Drive through. Yes. Ahab's fast fish. Kenny with an eye patch in a pirate uniform.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brian comes through. Kenny's drive through to talk things out and smooth things over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that uniform is great. It's kind of like, you know, for a visual cue, it's a la like the kind of Stranger Things uniform in the ice cream shop. Yeah. You know,
you mean like Uma Thurman and what's his name's daughter?
What's his face?
Ethan Hawke. Yeah.
But Kenny has that patch with a pirate on his shoulder, parrot on his shoulder.
Yes, and I actually really enjoy this scene because I feel like Brian is can be such a cad and kind of like such a, you know what I mean, like such a womanizer, etc. But like I like that he like basically confronts Kenny and basically forces him to sort of like talk it out.
Yeah, he cares.
Mm-hmm.
And like I was surprised how kind of thoughtful some of the moments in this scene were too.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about it kind of briefly already, but I said I really like them giving Brian that move where he pins it on himself.
Yes.
Because basically when Kenny, like they kind of get into it and Kenny like was like, well, what's wrong with my mom? What's wrong with her? Like basically describing like that she goes on dates with other men and no one seems to stick around and it kind of always like gets broken off. And he's like, well, tell me, I can handle it. Like, just let me know. And I wrote like, I'm not sure if he's like protecting Kenny from hearing his gripes about his mom or if Brian is like starting to see that maybe he really is the problem in this situations.
Yeah.
But I said it's a nice way to play it because like when Kenny is like talking at Brian and like not letting Brian get a word in edgewise, Brian's like, in the same way that he was with her mom. And so I feel like as the audience, we're expecting him to be like, she won't shut up, you know, mm-hmm. she just keeps talking, but instead he says, it's me.
Yeah.
And I really like the way that pays off.
It's not her, it's me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he like kind of like says some truths about himself. Like, I have a problem with commitment. I meet great people and I like find it easier.
Uh-huh.
And I also related to this personally because I'm the kind of person that would rather like stay home and read a book than like have to kind of like learn to live with other people's eccentricities sometimes. And I know like I'm getting older, I should probably try to like meet somebody. And I know that like love takes work, but I don't know. Sometimes it's nice to just kind of like stay home and read a book.
Yeah, watch your shows, read a book.
Watch your shows. Yeah.
Okay. Couple moments here that are great. I loved when Brian pulled up and he's ordering some food and he's like, a dish called Feeding Frenzy doesn't come with fries.
Yes. Kenny won't let him just talk to him. He makes him order food. And then he says, please talk into the blowhole, sir.
Sir. I liked when the guy in the car behind them is getting antsy and he's honking and stuff. But then after we didn't get to this, but Kenny punches Brian with a roll of quarters in his hand, punches Brian. And then he apologizes to the car behind and he goes, I'll be right with you, sir. And then the guy changes his tune. Hey, no problem. Take your time.
Yeah. I love when Brian orders the Feeding Frenzy. So this is why I think Kenny almost gets the MVP. Mm-hmm. He might get the MVP because whenever he's doing this like angry thing where he's brushing the microphone to the side.
Yeah. Yes.
I love that. I love that thing.
I honestly can't believe that this actor was 16.
Yeah.
He's really great.
Yeah. I love when Brian orders the Feeding Frenzy, like Kenny brushes the microphone to the side and yells, one frenzy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like when like him and Brian are getting into it, like while the guy's ordering, like he orders what, three burgers and a large shake.
Yes.
And Kenny says like, you make me sick. And the guy's like, two burgers and a medium shake.
I forgot about that. That was so good.
And so I also wrote, who the fuck honks in a drive-thru?
I know. And it wasn't even like that long. I've been in some drive-thru experiences that are take quite longer.
I tell you about a time that I honked in a drive-thru?
Yes, please.
So this was like, I was taking classes at GCC. Have I told this story before? Maybe I have.
Yeah, the car in front of you had a bumper sticker that said, honk if you love Jesus. So you just
And I honking. Love Jesus. So
I had to honk.
So I was like, I had like maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours between classes at Glendale Community College. And so I drove down to the El Pollo Loco and I was going to grab like a quick lunch and then eat it in my car and study for like a test. And like, so I get there and it's like early like lunch period. And I was like, oh my God, there's only one car ahead of me. This is great. Like, you know, sometimes you get backed up. And so I order my food at the speaker and I pull up behind this woman. And she is like not moving. Like, you know, at first you're like, there's an expected time. I feel like 3 to 5 minutes, mm-hmm. kind of normal. 5 minutes becomes like 10 minutes. And then this woman, I'm like watching her and she keeps like they'll give her like her food and then she'll look at it and then hand it back and forth.
No.
And like cars are like starting to like pile in behind me. And this is like one of those drive-through lines that has like a big kind of like a wall to your side. So there's like no way to like really kind of drive out and sneak out of it. And this woman keeps on fucking saying that the chicken is not up to par. And I hit a point where I fucking honked at her. And she's like, what do you want? What do you want from me? And I was like, I don't know. Fucking pull into the parking lot and then they can bring you your food. But like, this is insane.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm trapped here. I was like telling her, because like I think at this point it had been like 35 to 40 minutes.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I'm like literally trapped here. There's cars behind me and you're stopping me in front. And I've never like had that much, that agitating of an experience in a drive-thru. It was so fucking crazy. And she just kept on telling like the workers that like the pieces of chicken that they were giving her in her combo were like not up to par.
You could hear her saying that?
Yeah. It was like I had my window down. I like had stopped listening to whatever podcast I was listening to. And I was just like, and then when I pulled up, like the El Pollo Loco worker apologized to me, but I was like, no, please. I'm so sorry for you to have to deal with somebody like that. That's insane. And I was like, I'm sorry that you have to like deal with this in your day to day job.
Well,
and I was like, I wish they paid more for your work at Sandpiper. Yeah.
You know, the critical error you made was going to El Pollo Loco. You should have gone to El Pollo Normal Good Experience.
El Pollo Loco, I think, is my favorite fast food, and I always order the 2-piece leg and thigh, mm-hmm. where they give you like the kind of like the fire cooked chicken.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's, first of all, you're getting like less processed chicken.
Yeah.
And then you get it with like a tortilla, and I've been getting like broccoli as one of my sides and then pinto beans. And so I'll make tacos with broccoli, pinto beans, and the chicken.
That's great. Yeah.
And the best thing about it is that because you're ordering like the chicken and you're making it yourself, you get to put that chicken skin on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Chicken skin might be like the most delicious food in the fucking world.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Pollo Loco and Pollo Campanero and all the pollos.
Oh yeah, Campanero is great for sure.
Yeah.
I like when Brian is like, yeah, he does the Popeye impersonation. I think he does that because of like Kenny wearing the pirate.
Yeah,
he's so good.
Yeah,
Stephen Weber is just so talented.
Continuing his voice acting audition.
Whoa! Oh my gosh!
Kenny, come on, we gotta talk about this now.
But then when Brian taunts Kenny, like Kenny says like something like, you know, if I wasn't working, I'd take you out back and teach you a lesson. And Brian's like, you want to hit me? Will that make you feel better? And then he starts sticking out his tongue and like really taunting Kenny. like I wrote that like he's really asking for it.
Yeah, yeah. Can't fault Kenny for taking a shot.
And he like, clocks Brian pretty good. And then, but yeah, this is kind of when they have their moment that we talked about already, where like Kenny demands Brian to tell him like what's wrong with his mom. And then he says like, it's me, you know?
They come to a nice kind of like, they don't seem like besties again, but they seem like this is something they're going to get over. I liked it.
I mean, Kenny takes back the Spaten milkshake.
Would you eat, drink a milkshake with a fish meal? I don't think fish pairs with milkshakes.
I think I would, but I also like fish. I don't think you like fish at all, right?
I like fish and chips. I would not have, I'll have a fish and chips with a pint. I won't have a fish and chips with a milkshake.
But I mean, like, you'll dip your fish in tartar sauce, right?
No, I will not.
Oh, you
Thank
won't?
Thank you very much. Okay. No.
Because I was going to
put my fish in ketchup.
I was going to say tartar sauce is just savory milkshake.
Ooh, puke. God damn.
You know what I haven't been to in a long time? When you're back in SoCal, we should go. There's a place called Malibu Seafood on PCH.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
No, I'd love to. I'd like some fish and chips.
Yeah, dude, their fish and chips are incredible. And I used to do it where I would do, I would put the malt vinegar on, I would put salt and pepper, and then I would dip it in cocktail sauce.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, I feel like you would like cocktail sauce more than tartar, right?
Because I like ketchup. I do like cocktail more than tartar.
Cocktail is like ketchup plus relish, kind of.
Yeah, I just I'll do the vinegar and the ketchup.
My buddy and I, my friend Christo and I, we're taking like morning classes at Pierce College, another community college in the Valley. And we didn't have to work that day. So we like drove to Malibu Seafood. It was like a Thursday afternoon. We were there around 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And we were just like working on our creative writing projects. And you order kind of downstairs at the counter, and then you like go upstairs and they call your number and you pick it up. Mm-hmm. We get up to like the top patio, and there's basically a row of tables along a wall that overlooks the ocean. It's really pretty. And so we get up there, and Christo is kind of aiming towards the table. I was like, well, let's just sit at this table. Like, it was like next to a family sitting at another table, but like it, you know what I mean? Like, it was one of the prime tables where you can like see the ocean and kind of like really just appreciate it. And we get our food and we eat. And then after we leave, Chris is like, you know that family that was sitting at the table next to us? And I was like, yeah, what about him? He's like, yeah, that was Tom Hanks, Rita Wilson, and their children. And I had no idea. Like, I was like so caught up in whatever like creative writing story I was working on and the ocean, everything, that I like did not notice.
You mean Captain Phillips himself was there?
Yeah. And which is crazy.
In a seafood restaurant.
Which is crazy is that like when I went down and picked up my food, they gave me a little captain's hat, and I went up and I was like, hey, look, Chris, I'm the captain now.
Wait, was White Boy Summer there too?
It might have been him.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And Chris though, was like when he like didn't get something he ordered, I was like, well, that's life. And I was like, it's kind of like a box of chocolates. And I put a box of chocolates down on the table.
Wow. You and Christo, you guys sound like bosom buddies.
He's a good guy. Yeah, we go on hikes now. It's like, we're old friends.
That day really sounds like you made a splash.
Ooh, there you go.
Creative writing assignment.
Yeah, we were there for his bachelor party.
That fish meal, though, sounds like it was in a league of its own.
Anything else? Philadelphia.
I'm just big on eating out at restaurants.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to like sully your opinion on this episode, but it was
okay. Yeah. No, we talked an entire episode of Wings, if you can believe it or not. We will be continuing our quest next week with season 2, episode 10. I mean, 20. It's called Mother War Stripes.
The Mother War Stripes. Hey, a quick question for you.
Kenny's Revenge. Yeah.
Do you think that when Tom Hanks got cast in Elvis, did he say, I'm the Colonel now?
It's fun. I heard someone point out that he's always playing captains nowadays, except in the Elvis movie where he plays a colonel.
Well, do you have a stripe rating for this episode?
Oh yeah, we didn't rate it, did I? No. I started wrapping up. I'd go, yeah. I'm going to say three stripes. I'd say solid, slightly above par. Mm-hmm. I like, you alluded to the arc of the characters. It's Joe and Helen's romance conflicts that's dragging it down for me. But I loved the pairing of Kenny and Brian to me. This was Kenny and Brian's episode. I wanted a third scene of Roy with the glasses. Oh, yes. I wanted something else with the glasses, but a lot of great moments. It's a three that should wear its three stripes with pride.
I'm going 3.75. This one is close to a four for me. And I really like, mm-hmm. I don't want to spoil anything for our listeners, but I think this might be the last Kenny episode.
Fuck. I didn't want to say that. I was hoping we had one more.
I think this might be the last one, but I could be wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong. But I love that whole, just seeing him in the fast food restaurant uniform is so great. And I think that also, I think I'm going to give Kenny the MVP because, yeah, I thought he did a great job.
I'll second that. Yeah. He impressed me in this one.
Yeah. My PC violations, I think, would be, I wrote this a little creepy, having your top dog protagonist reading a stranger's diary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that probably Brian's womanizing kind of treads into that territory as well.
Yeah. And the Indian killer line.
Yeah. And also that Ahab's fast fish is kind of insensitive to pirates.
Yes. You know, not to mention buccaneers too.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen.
Huh? What are those earrings? Who? What do those earrings cost you?
The one I'm wearing?
Yeah.
Well, they're gold plated, not solid gold.
Mm-hmm.
They're a heirloom.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, my earrings, they cost a buck an ear.
I knew you were going somewhere.
Oh, also, I realized that we don't get a credit for the chef at the fast food restaurant that we just see behind Kenny.
Yeah.
He looks awesome.
Yeah, that's true.
He looks like he went on to be in You Can't Do That on Television.
Yeah, we talked to this season 2 episode of Wings. Next week we will return with Mother War Stripes. And this episode is available on Paramount Plus. But as always, hit us up at wingsnutsprogram@gmail.com if you'd like access to an episode to watch along with us before you listen. And if you're listening to us on a podcast app, why don't you go ahead and rate us? We'd appreciate that.
Tell us how much we... Give us 5 stars and tell us how much we suck.
That's all. So thank you, Emerson, for talking Wings.
Thanks, Jared. Until next time.